Welcome to the Vibe Lifter podcast. I'm Tish, one of the Reglan Food co-founders, and I'm here to help lift your vibe with inspiring stories from people out in their local communities doing good mahi. So settle in and let's meet our guest of the day. Today, we're chatting with Alina Winter, one of Reglan's absolute gems. She's a naturopath, nutritionist, Instagram sensation, and an amazing advocate for a regulated nervous system. Welcome, Alina. Oh, I feel like whenever we catch up, I learn something new. So I'm looking forward to all the things I'm going to learn today.
Oh, I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, this is nice. And finally having you in the factory as well, because you said before you haven't actually come up here before into the office area.
I know. I think the last time I saw it was with your grand opening.
Yes.
A long time ago.
A few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought if we could start off with you just sharing a little bit of your journey into becoming a naturopath, nutritionist, and herbalist, which is quite a few things that you've got going on there. What actually sparked the original passion for natural health?
Yeah, sure. So when I was much younger, it was through my own health journey that I found this path. So I actually had a really terrible reaction to a medication that I was prescribed when I was in kind of very early teens, sort of late tweens. And it was from that it sort of put me and my parents on this journey of looking for other options. And it was through a recommendation of a friend of the family's that we go and see this naturopath and herbalist that they were working with. And long story short, through working with this practitioner, my health improved so much. And it kind of, just really opened my mind to this other way of healing and this other way of getting well and how powerful a natural health approach could be. And so that kind of came with me in the years to come. I would see the same naturopath or use supplements to support myself. But I actually, after high school, I ended up going to Auckland Uni and I was studying a different degree because I was always quite, you know, very academic. And I was studying business and psychology, and that's the direction that I was going to take. But in my first year of uni, I was flatting and I was always Googling remedies to help cure my flatmates of their various ailments.
Yes.
And one day I decided to Google, how do you become a naturopath? Because I'd never really thought that that was, you know, a degree that you could get. I kind of thought that people just found themselves in it, or you were born into it, or something like that. And when I realized that you could actually get a degree in naturopathic medicine, that was it. I switched my path and started studying and got a degree in naturopathic and herbal medicine, and then later a diploma in nutrition.
Wow, the trifecta.
Yeah.
Cool. So you actually fully pivoted from where you were heading into the path you're on now.
Yeah.
And it feels good. You're like, this is the path.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember at the time telling like my parents and family, I think I want to actually go and be a naturopath. And it was quite a pivot. And I remember mum saying once, I think, you can always come back to your business degree, but I never did because it just feels like absolutely this is the place that I'm meant to be. Yeah.
Amazing. And you're learning business now anyway, running your own business.
Exactly. I know.
So you're having the crash course.
I don't think you necessarily need a business degree to start your own business.
So true.
Yeah.
So how did you first discover the connection between gut health and overall well-being? Why is that an important area for you? And obviously we're quite interested in gut health here at Reglan Food Co. So.
Yeah, of course. So I think it was when I was studying that link and the importance of gut health for overall health was really stressed. It's it was Hippocrates, who was a Greek physician, sort of often called the father of modern medicine, who's attributed to saying all disease begins in the gut. And that's quite a naturopathic principle or approach, that we need to consider what's going on in the gut no matter what someone is presenting with. And so my studies, my degree really installed that in me. And then through working with clients, it really reinforced the importance of having a healthy gut, not just if you have obvious gut symptoms going on, but it could be anything from hormonal troubles to skin troubles to autoimmune conditions, inflammation, like the list goes on. It's the gut can play such a huge role in all areas of health.
So Hippocrates knew what he was talking about.
He did.
And this is the same guy with the oath, right?
Yes, the Socratic oath. Yeah.
Wow. And so I guess going a little bit deeper into it, so the term gut health, you know, we say it ourselves, it's on products, you hear it a lot. I don't know if people really understand what it means. Like, what does it mean to actually have a healthy gut?
Yeah, so it's wonderful, firstly, that so many people are talking about gut health nowadays and that I guess modern medicine and also just general knowledge is catching up to what Hippocrates and naturopaths have known for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, when they say gut health or think gut health, they're thinking about the gut microbiome, which is the good bugs or good bacteria that reside mainly in the large intestine. And that's a really important part of gut health.
Mm.
But for me, when I consider gut health, I'm thinking about the whole gastrointestinal tract. So from the mouth all the way down the tube to where food exits the body, all of that is important to consider.
Yes.
And so not only the microbiome, very important, but also, for example, stomach acid production, enzyme production. That's a really important part of gut health. The lining of the intestines, if there's inflammation in there or what's kind of commonly called leaky gut or intestinal permeability, that's really important. The movement of food through the gastrointestinal tract is really important, your transit time. So I guess you can kind of think of it this way. It's sort of an interesting concept. When we eat something, technically it's still external to our body until it's absorbed into our body, into our cells.
Yeah.
So having a healthy gut is really ensuring that the process of processing this food, extracting what we need from the food, and then removing what we don't need out of the body, that whole process is working well.
I like that. I haven't heard it described that way before. So it's really the process of extracting nutrients from food.
Yeah, effectively. And all of those things that I mentioned, like the microbiome, play a role in that. And then, of course, a much wider role in other areas of our health. But yeah, kind of put it simply, the primary role of the gut is extracting nutrients from the food that we're eating, which is fuel for our life, really.
Yeah, it makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And so then I guess the next question is, well, how do you know if it's working? I guess there's some obvious symptoms if it isn't working, but are there any kind of common signs and symptoms you're looking for if you're looking at someone who has good gut health versus bad gut health?
Yeah, so I'm always asking clients about their bowel movements.
Popular topic.
Yes. Yeah. So ideally we would be passing anywhere from sort of 1 to 3 well-formed bowel movements a day.
Yeah.
Not straining, they're not too loose or falling apart in the bowel.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a sign of a healthy gut.
Mm-hmm.
If you're skipping days or finding that there's a lot of straining to pass a bowel movement, or they're quite loose, or you're having many, many bowel movements a day, that can be a sign that something's going on. A lot of people talk about bloating.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I think a certain degree of bloating is normal, because if you think about a meal that you're eating, that's going inside your body. And so that has to go somewhere.
It's filling space. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it is normal that, you know, at the end of the day, your stomach may not be as flat as it is in the morning. Or, you know, before a bowel movement, it may not be as flat as after a bowel movement. I wouldn't necessarily call that bloating. But an abnormal level of bloating may be if the abdomen or your stomach gets quite expanded and it's potentially uncomfortable or very firm to touch. That can be a sign that something else is going on. Feeling nauseous or having any sort of discomfort, reflux.
Yeah.
But I will say as well, for anyone who's experiencing those signs and symptoms, especially if they've kind of come out of the blue. I think it is really important to see a doctor about it, just to rule out any red flags, because I also don't want to pin all of those symptoms down just to kind of poor gut health, because sometimes they can be connected to something more sinister.
Yeah.
So I often say to clients, you know, if you have these symptoms going on, just have a chat to your doctor, see if they think you need any further testing.
Yeah.
And if they can't find anything, then it's kind of like it gives us the green light to go ahead with taking a holistic gut approach.
It's good advice.
Yeah.
Okay. And then also, so many of us have heard gut health influences mood and our clarity. So that's another interesting link. So talk to me about the link between gut health and, I guess, brain health.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. And I think there's a lot more discussions being had about this nowadays. So that link is called the gut-brain axis, which you may have heard before.
Has a name, yes.
Yeah. And so it's the bi-directional link between the gut and the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And so the main players in this are our nervous system, especially the vagus nerve, chemical messengers like neurotransmitters. Also, inflammation in the gut can influence the brain as well, and the microbiome as well can influence what's going on in the brain and the nervous system. So it's
as in actually influence your thoughts or like the quality of your brain function.
Well, a bit of both. You could you could say that yes, your gut microbiome can influence your thoughts.
Wow.
Because there has been evidence to show that the gut microbiome can influence anxiety and depression. So it's very interesting, the connection. It's quite an involved, complex area, but I think the most important key message is that stress in your nervous system can impact your gut, and your gut can impact stress and your nervous system. So when I'm working with clients,
self-reinforcing negative cycle.
It's like we've got this cycle and we sort of need to work out, okay, what's going to be the best place to kind of enter that cycle and start making changes. And so with some clients, it's through looking at stress in the nervous system.
Right.
For other clients, it's starting with gut health, or often it's actually doing a bit of both at the same time.
Oh, okay, it is complex, isn't it? Once you get into it,
like
everything's connected.
Yeah,
I guess that's really your whole job.
It is. Yeah, and I guess with my job, I'm constantly going between getting into the details and the complexities, but then also taking a step back and looking at the foundations.
Yeah,
because although what we've just talked about might sound quite complex, there are some simple foundational strategies that you can use and that I use with clients to support their gut health and their nervous system.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that now because I have a lot of questions for you about nervous system regulation, because I know this has sort of become one of your specialty areas. And I know many people, you know, are struggling with stress, struggling with burnout. It's incredibly common, especially in the corporate world, I guess. So how does the nervous system play a role in that? And then what are some of the things that we could do to help regulate it?
Sure. So I think briefly, just to explain what I mean when I talk about the nervous system and nervous system regulation or dysregulation. So we're talking about the autonomic nervous system, which is a branch of our nervous system that controls automatic bodily processes like
breathing,
respiration, blood pressure, heart rate, digestion, coming back to that link. And the autonomic nervous system is then further split into two branches or two main branches.
Okay.
The parasympathetic nervous system.
Yes.
Otherwise known as rest and digest.
Yes.
And again, we see
that's a nice catchy name for it.
Yeah.
Helps you remember.
Or rest and restore. But for our conversation, rest and digest.
Perfect.
Because we're talking about the gut. And then the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight. And we can also think about these, the sympathetic being a little bit like the accelerator in a car. The parasympathetic being like the brake. Neither are good nor bad, although hearing this, you might think, oh, I want to rest and digest all the time and fight and flight, you know, sounds like it's never helpful. But they're actually both really important. And it's the balance between these two nervous systems that is key. And so coming back to your question around stress and burnout, so when we have a history of prolonged stress or potentially in some cases trauma, that can influence the function of the autonomic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And so we can see what is kind of commonly termed nervous system dysregulation, mm-hmm. which means the balance between these two nervous systems, parasympathetic and sympathetic, can be disrupted. And so that can look like lacking the flexibility to move between states as required. Mm-hmm. You might get stuck in a state that's not as appropriate for the situation at hand. Mm. You might struggle to return back to a rest and digest state after a stressor. So as an example, to illustrate what I'm saying, you know, going through an email inbox, for example.
And trying to desperately get it to zero.
Stressful for a lot of people to varying degrees, but that really is not life-threatening.
No.
In pretty much all cases, I'm going to say.
It's not a tiger.
No. And that shouldn't be causing high levels of fight or flight activation.
Yeah, however, but it still does.
It still does. Mm. However, hearing your house getting robbed at night, that should cause fight or flight activation.
Yeah, you want to get out of there.
So it's not that either state is bad. It's just about we really want to support our nervous system, whose primary goal is to keep us safe. Mm. We want to support it to respond appropriately to the situations we're presented with day to day. And so coming back to your question around how we can support our nervous system or regulate our nervous system, basically we want to do things that show our nervous system that we are safe.
Right.
So I often think about it in two main ways. So firstly, there are the things that we do daily or weekly that can improve our stress response and our resilience, support our vagus nerve, which is a key player in the parasympathetic rest and digest nervous system. So this might look like exercise, nutrition, time in nature, connection, time with others, play, all of those wonderful things.
Sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other kind of main way we can support it is using tools in the moment. Mm. And so that might look like deep breathing, slowing down, not multitasking, not rushing. All of these things can feed into that perception of stress and cause us to be more dysregulated.
Yeah.
So it might be taking breaks, stepping outside, doing these little micro tools kind of in the moment to support yourself. And this is an area I'm especially passionate about because I feel like it's kind of being missed in the conversation around stress.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
It's so key. And sometimes, well, for myself, it's almost as simple as just reminding yourself, oh, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, actually, this is fine. I got this.
Yeah.
You know, just take it slow. It'll be all right.
Absolutely.
But without that reminder, your brain is kicking into overdrive and going, oh, and I've got that to do. And how am I going to get there on time? And someone's waiting for me for this. And it can all just get out of hand.
Yeah. And kicking into overdrive, but also sometimes shutting off. Because when we are in that heightened stress state, the prefrontal cortex, which is the logical part of our brain, that can actually start to go offline as more of these primal parts of the brain, these fear centers like the amygdala, kind of take over. And so it can be a lot harder to make rational decisions or think, perform at our best.
Yeah, we're getting hijacked.
We are getting
by
hijacked.
Our own mind.
And so it's not just about, you know, if you experience anxiety or not. It's more about if you want to perform at your best and be able to respond to life as you're designed to, understanding your nervous system and supporting your nervous system to be in appropriate states, I think is a really powerful tool.
So powerful. And there's so many different applications for it. Like I know at the moment you've been doing quite a lot of study around group situations and trauma-informed facilitation, which is super interesting. And we had a great chat about this a couple of weeks ago. And I'm curious to hear, you know, for listeners who run businesses or lead teams, how can they be more sensitive to the needs of their people? Because there's a lot of complex backgrounds and things going on in any group, right? So what are some of the things you've learned from that course you've been doing?
Yeah, thank you. I love this question and I love the chat we had about it recently. So I think for leaders or business owners, the first thing to think about is what I just mentioned around your people will not only be enjoying themselves more if they're in a more regulated state, but they'll also be able to perform better.
Mm.
So I think it's a really important part of facilitation or leadership, creating a healthy culture within your group, is opening the conversation around stress. And nervous system regulation may be a term that people are not familiar with, and I don't think we necessarily have to use this term, but opening the conversation around stress and how people are feeling and what things potentially contribute to their stress or what things help them feel less stressed. And people may or may not be aware of this because I think we all have different levels of awareness.
Yeah.
But if we can open that conversation, I think that's a really beautiful first step, because it's acknowledging that we all have such different nervous systems and different backgrounds in terms of the stress or traumas or experiences in our life. 20 to 30% of the population are also highly sensitive, so their nervous systems.
Is that high?
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh, that's higher than I would have thought.
Yeah. So it's worth acknowledging that we're all so different, and that you will have people in your team that are more sensitive or may have a history of high stress, and their nervous systems may need different things than you need. And so if we can, create a culture where, as best as possible, we're opening the conversation to talk about stress, and then also I think giving people autonomy where possible to make choices that support where they're at in their nervous system. And so that could look so different. I mean, that could be applied to pretty much anything in a team or work environment. And if we can, as leaders and facilitators, encourage people to step out of their comfort zone into their growth zone, but not forcing people into their panic zone.
Try and avoid the panic zone.
Then it, coming back to what I said, you know, it's just going to be a much nicer environment for everyone. A client of mine actually shared, she works for a local business in Raglan. She said that, I'm not sure if it was business-wide or just her kind of unit's initiative, but they came together as a team and they talked about what their early warning signs were of being stressed or overwhelmed or dysregulated. And they wrote it down on a piece of paper.
Individually. Like, yeah, look out if I'm getting snappy.
Exactly. It's kind of like the red flags, but coming together, because we all get stressed.
So all of us.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. And we all have our kind of, our tell or our sign. So for me, it would be, I think, when I start multitasking or when I start rushing. Can you think of anything for you?
Plenty. I think if I don't have a good night's sleep, you know, for say, I'm okay for one night, but two consecutive nights, by the third day, I'm like, okay, I am not functioning as well as I should be. My decisions are not as clear and I'm, you know, tripping over a word here or there. Or I can notice it quite obviously.
And so within her team, they all wrote down their different ones. And I think there were some, like, for one person, even things like, oh, my ears go red, or I start, you know, getting a little bit snappy, or like these things that we're doing in the moment. And then as the team did this, they could then recognize each other's kind of early warning signs and then support each other within the team.
That's
and
beautiful.
I thought that was such a beautiful application of taking this information around nervous system awareness and nervous system regulation and bringing it into a team environment to actually support the people around you.
That's a great one, because then you can show empathy, you know, because then it's not like, oh, they're really being horrible to me today. It's like, oh, they must be feeling dysregulated and quite stressed. What can I do to help them feel better? Yeah, I love that. That's great.
I thought it was such a beautiful open conversation around this.
Very cool. So I guess coming more into the nutrition, you know, herbal medicine side of things, because we've got a lot to cover here with all your three specialties. I wondered if you could recommend, I don't know, let's say just three key foods or nutrients or even supplements to improve gut health specifically, or to regulate stress, because we've been talking about that as well. What would they be and why?
Big question.
Yes, it is a big one.
Well, let's start with maybe foods and gut health. So firstly, probiotic foods, so fermented foods.
Yes.
Really important for gut health. Of course, we have our yogurts.
Yeah, and I did not ask you to say that. I'm just saying.
You're not holding up a sign that says yogurt. Yeah.
Please mention the yogurt now.
Yeah. So yogurt, kefir, kombucha, mm-hmm. water kefir as well, mm-hmm. sauerkraut, kimchi, all of these sorts of foods. Stuff. Really good. And then prebiotic foods as well. So these contain fibers that feed the good bugs.
Yes.
So also really important. I mean, it's basically all of your plant foods. Mm. Notable ones are kind of like onion, garlic, leek, banana, oats. And interestingly, I will say if someone's listening to this and they feel like those foods don't work for them, the probiotic or prebiotic, sometimes that can also be a sign that your gut health is a little bit out.
Oh, interesting. Because I know people, even as you said that, I was like, oh, garlic.
Yeah.
Like, those are sort of trigger foods for some relatives of mine.
If you think about it, so because these prebiotic foods are food for the bugs in your body, if you have an imbalance of bugs, like potentially an overgrowth of unwanted bacteria in the gut, mm-hmm. it can also feed them. Mm-hmm. And so that's how these foods can cause symptoms in some people. So it's in most cases, it's not that the foods are the problem,
right.
but it's that the microbiome is imbalanced. And if we can actually work on supporting the microbiome, then people should be able to tolerate these foods because they are generally really healthy foods for us. And then probably thirdly, polyphenols.
Oh,
which,
okay.
Yeah, yep. They're a plant molecule. They're a type of antioxidant and often found in your really colorful fruits and vegetables,
berries,
even in cocoa, green tea, olive oil, red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And these have a really beneficial effect on the gut. They're anti-inflammatory.
Mm.
They also help to feed and nourish the good bacteria in our gut. So I think, you know, in general, if we can be eating a lot of plant foods, eat the rainbow, you know, have a diversity of fruits and vegetables, especially vegetables in our diet, that's really going to help support our gut health. And then through the connection we were talking about earlier, also our mood and our nervous system and mental health as well.
Yes. And then we're winning.
Yeah.
You spoke a little bit about this already. This was actually, you know, part of your original interest in this whole field, right, was herbal remedies and the ones that were recommended to you.
Yeah.
So what role do those play in what you practice? Are there specific herbs you swear by for gut health, stress relief? Do you have like a little selection of them in your back garden that you go and, this is what I'm visualizing, you go and hand pick for certain remedies, or is it a bit more complex than that?
Gosh, there are so many herbs, and I love using herbal medicine in my practice because it feels like a whole pharmacy that I can choose from to support my clients. So, I mean, yes, you can go and grow herbs in your garden. Herbs like lemon balm, chamomile, these are actually two herbs that support both the gut and the nervous system. So I often use them for that kind of gut-brain axis picture or presentation, and those you can grow yourself. But then there are other herbs that they just aren't really practical to grow and harvest. I've tried with some of them.
Yes, so, I imagine you have.
Yeah, one being ashwagandha, otherwise known as withania.
Yes.
It's quite popular now as an adaptogen, but the real medicine lies in the root. And when you grow that plant, or I found when I was growing that plant, building this relationship with it, the thought of digging it up and harvesting the root.
You just couldn't do it.
I did it once to one of them, but then I... It felt a bit like murder.
I've killed you. Yeah, no, I see how you'd feel that way. True, because once you've taken the root, that's it, right? They're done for.
So I took one of them, and it was a beautiful process to have that connection to the plant and to the herbal medicine. But to really obtain the benefits from particularly those kind of more fibrous, rooty parts of the plants, it is better to get that as an extract. Whereas herbs that are lighter or softer, like chamomile, lemon balm, you know, it's easier to kind of grow those and have them as tea.
Mm.
But yeah, there's such a wide range of herbs, and I love using them.
Yes, and then every culture has their own too, right? So you can go as deep as you like into those and all the traditions behind them. And
yeah, and there are still some cultures and some areas in the world where that is the only medicine that they use.
Fully relying on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's quite remarkable what they do with nature's first aid kit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a recent example of this, a very mild one, but I got terrible sunburn. I showed it to you actually. Mm-hmm. And I was using a aloe vera gel, you know, a good one, good quality one, organic one that I had at home, and it was doing something, but wasn't making any dramatic difference. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a week into this horrible sunburn, I was like, hey, wait, I've got an aloe vera plant like growing in a pot in my garden, and I'd forgotten it was there. And then I went out and got, you know, fresh aloe vera, and it was a radical difference. Wow. The second I put it on, I was like, wow, this feels so much better. And then it started healing up so much faster after doing that.
Wow.
It's like, why wasn't I doing this from the beginning? You know, it was right there.
Yeah. Mm. That's such a wonderful example of a plant that, we can easily grow and harvest, and it's so simple to use, and then you don't need all the preservatives and fillers and everything else that's added to a commercial aloe vera gel. Good one to talk about going into summer.
Yes, everybody, grow aloe vera.
Or actually, let's start with sun protection.
Yes, and wear sunblock.
And then aloe vera is a backup.
I know. So for someone who's listening and they're just sort of starting on their health journey and it's all a little bit overwhelming and there's so many different things they could do and try, what are just some really simple, maybe like step one for improving their gut or nervous system health?
I can understand why people feel overwhelmed because there's so much information out there. Mm. And so I really think it's important to start with the foundations, mm-hmm. because if you can get the foundations right, I honestly believe in some cases or in a lot of cases, it can sort out maybe 80% or more of what's going on.
Wow.
So looking at eating a healthy diet, so lots of plant foods, quality protein, adequate hydration, getting in lots of water. This is important. Moving your body, getting outside, sleep and rest.
Yeah.
So not just sleep overnight, but taking breaks throughout the day, and connection with others, I think, is also really important.
Yes.
And then if you're interested in this, if you're someone who potentially experiences stress or anxiety, I think learning more about your nervous system and your nervous system states and tools that you can use to support nervous system regulation. And that's the reason why I share so much about that on my Instagram. There's so much
great
content on there that I mean, it's helped so many people. It's helped me, and that's why I want to share it, because from my practice, I've seen that it is truly such a key foundation of health, and because the nervous system influences all systems in our body, I think that's also a really wonderful place to start, and it doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be, you know, this long morning or evening practice. It can just start with slowing down in your day, taking some deep breaths, taking breaks.
And it's free.
Yeah,
it's not an expensive supplement, you know, it's simple tools.
Yeah, so hopefully that feels like potentially some places to start for people.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I'm kind of curious, you know, what a day looks like for you as this goddess of health and well-being. In kind of maintaining your own health and well-being, right? Because you can only be as useful to other people as you are at looking after yourself, and you're looking after a lot of people now in different ways. So what are some things that you prioritize doing just for you?
Yeah. So I try and set myself up for a good day starting in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I, for many years, have liked the idea of having kind of a regimented morning practice.
Okay.
But
I'm getting the impression this isn't happening.
It hasn't happened. And I've kind of surrendered to that, because for me, I know what I don't want to do. And that's, I don't want to start rushing and going on my phone and getting frazzled within that first hour of waking. So I will tend to do something for my nervous system in the first hour or so of my day. So that sometimes might look like going for a walk with my dog.
Mm-hmm.
It might look like chatting to my partner, you know, maybe over a cup of tea.
Yes.
It might look like meditation or breath work or journaling, sometimes planning my day.
Mm.
But I try and approach whatever I'm doing with a sense of softness and slowness.
Not rushing.
Yeah, nourishing. So it feels like a practice, even though it doesn't always look like the same practice.
Mm.
But a couple of fairly non-negotiable foundations. I do try and go outside every morning within the first hour or two of waking, or even sometimes it's just sitting by an open window to get that light.
Yeah, some air and light.
Yeah, which is really beneficial for your health. And also having protein with my breakfast is another thing that I do every day, because I didn't mention before, but supporting balanced blood sugar levels is really important for your nervous system and overall well-being.
Mm.
So for me, prioritizing protein with all of my meals supports that.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the day, again, you know, trying to take breaks, tuning into your nervous system as much as I can, not getting caught in that go, go, go.
Yeah.
And that is my tendency. So I do have to stay aware
ambitious
of
lady.
That. Yes, I am. Recovering type A. And taking breaks. I have a standing desk and a walking pad treadmill in my home office, which
that's cool.
I love. And that has really transformed working from home for me, being able to get a bit of movement in.
Yes, I need to get one of those.
Yeah, I can see your standing desk here in the corner.
Yeah, I've got the standing desk, but not the treadmill. Yeah.
Yep, that would fit under there. So I like that. But also getting outside. I mean, the standing desk and treadmill is great, but it's not a substitute for actually walking outside. So it might not be every day on busy days, but I do try multiple times a week to get out in nature.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that really keeps me feeling well.
Mm, so important. I feel like you've already given so many great tips. I'm like, should I really ask you for more? And you have heaps on your Instagram as well. So for anyone listening, you know, and you're not already following, make sure you find Alina on there, because she does very regular posts that are both funny and informative, which is a difficult balance to strike. But yeah, just balance, that magical word that everybody aspires to, and everyone has a different version of what it looks like. But if you're seeking balance in your life, is there something to prioritize?
I think it's about recognizing that we don't have to be perfect.
Mm.
So 80-20, you know, if we can focus on nourishing ourselves, our guts, our nervous system through what we're eating and what we're doing the majority of the time, then the 20% of the time, you know, it's okay if we don't completely get it right or do it perfect. There's really no such thing as perfect when it comes to health. So, yeah, I don't know if that fully kind of answers your question. But again, you know, like you said, I've been throwing a lot of tips and tools, and I kind of want to give that as a take-home message, is that don't strive for perfect.
Mm.
And as an example, with the nervous system tools, you know, I have a lot of conversations with people around, for example, slowing down, and people saying, well, you know, I keep forgetting and I can't do it, or I can't do it in these situations. And I say, that's okay. Even like when I started doing this as a tool, I would catch myself maybe once a day.
Yeah.
And then it would be a couple of times a day. And now it's most of the time I'll catch myself. And the more that we can kind of make these little incremental changes, the better, I think, you know, not overwhelming ourselves with trying to do too much at once or make too many changes or, try and achieve these big lofty goals when it comes to our health. It's just about coming back to basics and step by step making these changes and trying to do it most of the time and not striving for perfect.
Yep, perfection is not the goal.
Yeah, also a recovering perfectionist, so take it from me.
Join the club.
It doesn't help.
Yeah. No, I think that is a perfect way to end.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alina. I really appreciate all your knowledge, how generous you are with sharing it. And I think it's really amazing as well how you've just put yourself out there and started sharing this, all these tools that you have with people, because, I mean, you might think that it's just obvious and sort of basic, but I think for people, a lot of this is like a revelation, you know. So it's just so valuable to have that there and have it coming from someone who's friendly and really cares. So, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. It's such a joy to be able to share with more people these things that have helped me so much and changed my life and then changed my clients' lives. And now being able to kind of just put them out there free for all, please, you know,
take these tools,
take what you want and take what works for you. And because I really believe that they can really help people.
Yeah, they can literally change people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, not I've even an exaggeration.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen it. So, yeah. Oh,
thank you, Elena. Thanks for listening to the Vibe Lifter podcast. We hope that tuning into this interview has lifted your vibe. Check out reglanfoodco.com to learn more about the people and projects we're stoked to be supporting. A true hobby, the one to shake the sun and down dawn. I follow through with the dish that you play.